The threat level here in Brussels remains at the highest level. More terror raids overnight as European officials prepare for that next attack.
We will stand with them, and we will together crush and destroy ISIS.
What they can do is scare and make people afraid and disrupt our daily lives and divide us. And as long as we don't allow that to happen, we're going to be okay.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:08 and it's Wednesday. It's March 23rd, 2016. Welcome to another day and welcome to another business day as well. Lots to talk about today. Later in the program, we're going to introduce you to a new robot delivering pizza, pizza delivering robot, I should say. That's coming up later. We're also going to preview the New York Auto Show just ahead. We're going to also have the latest on travel concerns after the Brussels attack. But first, from the WGN Market Desk, here's your pre-dawn market intel. First from Brussels, where there are multiple reports now, including from Sky News and Reuters, that a suspect has been arrested in Brussels in connection with the bombings yesterday. It was initially reported by a Belgian newspaper, but now has been confirmed by Reuters. Again, Sky News also reporting the arrest of this suspect. Asian shares overnight slipped in subdued trading as investors pulled back just a bit ahead of the long Easter weekend. There's also some jitters following the Brussels terror attacks and fears of further incidents. Japan's Nikkei surrendered earlier gains to close down about 0.3%. Chinese shares were little changed. Hong Kong retreated as well, off about 6%, 0.6%. In Europe, Germany's DAX has opened a little bit higher, almost a percent higher. Belgium's BEL 220 has opened as well, just about a half a percent higher. So far, Europe is all green this morning after a rough day yesterday. Some investors yesterday, by the way, headed to the safety of gold and U.S. Treasuries, and airline and travel stocks generally took big hits yesterday. We'll continue to follow the developments in Brussels throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show here on The Opening Bell as well. Stay with 720 WGN. Chicago Fed President Charles Evans says he expects two interest rates this year, interest rate hikes. During a speech to the City Club of Chicago yesterday, he offered his outlook on the economy ahead.
At the Chicago Fed, we expect 2016 growth will be 2 to 2.5%. And I think the fundamentals are really quite good for the economy going forward.
U.S. Treasury yields rose as traders took his comments to the bullish to be bullish for the U.S. economy. He did offer this about the road ahead.
The real test is when inflation picks up and gets to our 2% objective, or if it went past that. So as long as we're still underrunning inflation, I think we've got room to see how this plays out and be cautious. But I would say that the reason why we're still being cautious is there's a lot of risk around the world. I mean, if you look at global economies, they are struggling.
Charles Evans, the president and CEO of the Chicago Federal Reserve, hardly breaking any new ground, but still, this was an insight into what the Fed is thinking and where they plan to go as the months go ahead here. The New York International Auto Show gets underway today, and it is one of the country's biggest show. This is the show's 116th anniversary. Lots to talk about with the show. Associated Press auto writer Tom Krischer is leading the coverage for the Associated Press, and he says there are going to be a couple of things that are hot.
You're going to see quite a few hybrid and electric vehicles introduced here. Automakers are starting to market those as more mainstream vehicles with better attributes. They accelerate faster, they're quieter, and they're more reliable because they have fewer moving parts.
Let's go to New York this morning. Rob Peterson is with Buick. He's the marketing manager for Buick, and Buick plans a couple of big debuts. They're going to have a big presence at the New York International Auto Show. Rob, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is one of the most look forward to shows, auto shows. Buick's going to be front and center. Can you give us a preview of what you're going to be introducing?
Absolutely. Well, we're really excited. Today we're going to be revealing the Buick Encore, which is really the bread and butter of the Buick brand. It represents about 30% of our sales, and it's in one of the fastest growing segments. So we're really excited to bring this new vehicle back out into the marketplace. It also happens to be one of the vehicles that does very well in the Chicago market.
SUVs seem to be seeing a resurgence of popularity. We saw them decline after oil prices were so high and gas prices were so high previously. What do you think is fueling the popularity of SUVs and these small SUVs?
It's really smaller SUVs that are powering the growth right now. It's the compact SUVs and the small SUVs. They're two of the fastest growing segments in the industry right now. In fact, compact SUVs is the fastest and largest segment. And I think what it is that customers enjoy about these vehicles is that you get the SUV feel. You get to sit up in your chair. You get great sight. You get a lot of functionality. And these smaller SUVs also provide a great driving dynamic that I think, you know, people are enjoying from sedans, but basically moving on up.
Buick is one of the country's best known brands. Are things healthy at Buick these days? And are you seeing...
Yeah, it's a very good year for Buick right now. We've had two tremendous years in a row. This year, we're entering into the market with four new products. We started off with a convertible. In fact, the first two convertibles that were delivered in the Chicago area landed on February 1st and were sold on February 2nd. Some fantastically aggressive salesperson out there. And then we've got the new Encore coming in September. And in the summer months, we have the Buick LaCrosse, which is one of our stables, and a all-new Buick Envision, which is a compact SUV. So we're really excited about what's in front of us and where we're at right now in the marketplace.
We're chatting with Buick Marketing Manager Rob Peterson this morning about the New York International Auto Show, which gets underway today. We're going to continue our conversation.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 520. We're keeping you up to date on developments in Brussels this morning, where there are reports that one of the suspects in the Brussels attacks has been arrested this morning. We're told by Belgian media that this suspect was apparently one of the airport attackers, again arrested this morning in Belgium, in Brussels. Stay with WGN for the very latest on this developing story. We're talking with Rob Peterson this morning on The Opening Bell. He's the Buick Marketing Manager. The New York International Auto Show gets underway. And Rob, Buick is one of those legacy car manufacturers in the United States. We always, at least in my family, going back, I remember my dad with his Buick, best known for the big sedans. How challenging is it for a company like Buick to keep up with trends and change its, you know, this legacy that it has?
That's a great question. The narrative out there is exactly as you described it. It's big sedans. That's how people tend to describe Buick. The reality, though, is that the brand has evolved based on product. So in 2007, we launched the Buick Enclave, which is represents about a third of the sales of Buick as well. And since at that point in time, 70% of all Buick sales were sedans. And if you fast forward to 10 years later to today, 60% of our sales are SUVs. And so that's kind of one of the ways that you try and evolve your brand reputation is through product. But there's a definite gap between what people remember from the Buick being big sedans and where we're at today, which is offering cars with some performance, smaller cars, much more family-friendly crossovers and SUVs. So it's a bit of a challenge. But then the other piece to it, too, is that having a great legacy is a fantastic place to be. We have a lot of loyalists who come back to our dealerships every year looking for the latest and greatest Buick.
And speaking of that, the narrative from my household, at least, the Buick is always a tank and it lasts and it, you know, has that reputation. So fast forward to this auto show, and crossovers are going to be pretty big. Buick's going to have a lot of competition. Toyota's going to introduce a new crossover. Lincoln and Jeep also plan new crossovers. This is some pretty heavy competition.
Absolutely. There's always great competition. And I think what customers have been seeing over the last 5 years is that the level of quality, the level of technology, design, interior refinement across the industry has really stepped up its game and made it a great time for customers. From a Buick perspective, where we have to go is we have great quality reputation. We just were, you know, we're the only domestic brand in Consumer Reports top 10. We're very successful at J.D. Power's dependability study. We're in the top five there as well. Where the Buick brand has an opportunity is in sales and satisfaction and at the dealership level, where we've consistently in the top three in customers coming back and saying they have a great dealership experience. The cars are great. Now you have to look for things that differentiate you a little bit more from the customer. And we think the dealership experience is also one that we can leverage.
And also new users of your brand. I think I saw a report recently that millennials are the biggest buyers of these small SUVs and SUVs in general. How challenging is it to market to that younger generation?
To market to that younger generation is definitely a different challenge. They consume media in a unique way, something that's a little bit untraditional or non-traditional for marketers who've been in this space for a long time. But it's also very exciting because millennials are on the cutting edge of receiving information. It pushes us as marketers to be out there in the digital space in a more aggressive way, and a more creative way. But you know what we're finding with vehicles like the Buick Encore is that it's millennials, especially female, in the urban settings who are looking for cars that are both something that rewards them, a little bit of a premium, but also has a very functional element to it. It's nimble. It's easier to find parking spaces. And when you find those parking spaces in the big city, it's easier to park the car in there. So we kind of know where they're at. We know how to reach them, and we think we have the right product to reach them with, which is a little bit different from having the full-size SUVs that we used to have and having to try and offer that. We now have something that really meets their needs.
And how big is tech and gadgets in the new vehicles to attract those?
It's huge. The one thing that we're having across just about any age group is separation anxiety from your cell phone or from your smartphone. We're with them all the time. I'm down here in New York City. I'm watching people walk all over the place. Nobody's paying any attention. They're on their phones. They're walking with their phones. What the key for automotive industry is to be able to connect your smartphone, which is really your life, into your car in a smart and intelligent way and allow these people to continue to remain connected, but still have your hands on the steering wheel and your eyes on the road. And we do this with things like standard 4G LTE hotspots on all Buicks. So up to seven devices can connect to your Buick. And so you can have seven devices on there. We have Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, Bluetooth. These things allow this younger generation and those of us that are more and more addicted to our smartphones to bring them into the car and use them in a safe way.
The auto show in New York, I didn't realize this is the biggest, one of the biggest auto shows in the world, even bigger than Detroit. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. For those of us that are inside the auto industry, the New York show is one of our favorite because not only is it big, it means it has a lot of space, it has a lot of cars out there. It's also the last one of the season, and so we don't leave anything on the table when we walk into New York. And take nothing away from the Chicago Auto Show because that is one of the most popular attended auto shows in the industry, if it's not the most popular attended auto show. So the Chicago Auto Show, Detroit Auto Show, New York, three of our favorite places to go because they're great, great places to interact with customers.
Rob Peterson is the Buick Marketing Manager at the New York International Auto Show. The show gets underway today. You can find it at autoshowny.com at the Jacob Javits Center if you happen to be in New York. Rob, thanks for being with us on the opening bell.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. At its Loop You In event at company headquarters in Cupertino, California, Apple unveiled a series of incremental product upgrades, not least of which was a smaller iPhone. Dana Woolman with the tech blog Engadget says it should look familiar to many.
It is the iPhone SE. It is a 4-inch iPhone. It's funny, everyone's calling it the small iPhone, but really it's the same form factor that Apple was selling for years.
Up next, a new version of the iPad Pro.
It's now available in a smaller size, so it's now available with 9.7-inch screen, just like the iPad Air that people are used to.
Apple's also lowering the price on the entry-level Apple Watch to $299 and releasing a series of new colorful nylon watch bands. And Woolman says CEO Tim Cook took the opportunity to reiterate the company's hard line when it comes to privacy and security.
And then, as the event unfolded, announced some more security features for Apple's products.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:38. If drones can deliver packages for Amazon, why can't robots deliver pizzas? One major pizza chain has been testing a robotic delivery unit that can deliver 10 pizzas in heated compartments and complete deliveries within a 20-mile radius, allegedly on a single charge.
The seeds of the idea were developed at Domino's and incubated in our purpose-built innovation space, D-Lab. It was here that we started work on a Domino's robotic unit. Using a
pizza goes high-tech with cheese and pepperoni this morning on The Opening Bell. Joining our conversation is Dale Buss, a business writer at Forbes, chief executive and brand channel, where his latest story appears. Good morning, Dale. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, and thanks, Steve.
The Domino's robotic unit, is this real? Is it gonna? At first, I thought it was a joke.
Well, it's interesting because so many things that Domino's is doing with technology these days, when you first hear them, you're like, really? I mean, because you can order a Domino's pizza now by just hitting an emoji on your smartphone. So, yeah, I don't blame you, really. And as you can hear from the clip of the ad that you ran, this is in New Zealand, folks, so don't be looking for a Domino's robot to be, you know, toddling down your street in Chicago anytime soon. But yeah, it's very real, and what it is it's a test in New Zealand by Domino's there of a robot that actually, as the ad mentioned, you know, stack a bunch of pizzas in, and it's programmed to show up at your door. I think it's in Wellington, New Zealand, where they're testing it. But it's really just the latest example of a company that is kind of saying these days that we're a technology company that just happens to make pizza. So, you know, another thing that's gotten a lot of publicity lately that Domino's has done is they came up with a delivery vehicle based on a Chevrolet Spark mini car that's especially designed just for Domino's franchisees to buy and then use in their neighborhood deliveries. And it's got neat little features like a warming oven inside. It's got a puddle light down on the ground that says Domino's. It's got a permanent sign on the top that says Domino's. It's got extra space for storing Coke and Coca-Cola and other things like that. And it's just one more way that Domino's is trying to press the envelope with delivery technology and other things to indicate to millennials that, hey, we get where your life is at. Yeah, we want to get you pizza, but we want to get it to you in a quick and cool way.
When I posted this on social media last night teasing this segment, the initial response I got was, well, there goes pizza delivery jobs. if you're a listener,
far-fetched.
Yeah. Far-fetched. It's a ways off, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is it's probably more of a gimmick than anything else. But as I said, Domino's is trying to demonstrate that they are all about getting your pizza to you in any way possible, as quick as possible. Now, you may recall several years ago, maybe about 5 years ago now, Domino's had this branding and marketing campaign where they basically came clean about the quality of their pizza. And they basically acknowledged, hey, our pizza isn't up to snuff. It's not as good as it should be. And so the company undertook this big effort to improve the quality of its pizza. And so they've kind of put that to bed. The quality is back. They haven't had any huge food or menu innovation in a couple of years. A couple of years ago, they came up with a fresh pan pizza. So now for them, it's all about how do we get that pizza to you as fast and convenient as we can. So you can order Domino's now online via text. They've got a Siri-like voice assistant called Dom. You can order it with your Apple Watch. And, of course, I mentioned the emoji. And you know what? It's working because Domino's has been steadily closing the gap between itself and Pizza Hut, which is the number one pizza delivery or pizza consumption brand in the U.S. And for Domino's and CEO Patrick Doyle, you know, this path is definitely working. They're eating up market share, and they're definitely the force in the business.
Because one of the things that you mentioned and we mentioned in that clip that we played was this GPS tracking system and technology that they're using. That's really the star of what's going on here, right? They're using these GPS trackers to follow your pizza every step of the way.
Right. And in the ad for the innovation they've tried in New Zealand, what it shows is a little robot that kind of reminded me of R2-D2 from, you know, the original Star Wars. Kind of toddles through this neighborhood, past houses and stores and apartments, and ends up at the door of this couple that ordered the pizza. Obviously, they're not surprised to see it. They go out and they have a special code that the Domino's operator has given them, and they punch it in, and the door opens, and they've got their 5 or 6 boxes of pizza.
So they can't really beat the thing and get it open, and there's
You could. It's definitely an invitation to criminals. In a civilized society, you'd hope that Domino's pizza robot would, you know, get to its ultimate destination. But as I said, we're far away from the point where we're going to be seeing these around the neighborhood.
What lesson do you think other pizza places can learn from Domino's?
Well, they'd better learn. And I know that the CEO of Pizza Hut, you know, has recently said and acknowledged that, hey, you know, we're kind of getting our lunch eaten here. He didn't specifically acknowledge Domino's, but he has said that they need to catch up in technology. They need to make the brand, you know, more streamlined and their delivery process more consistent and easier. So the lesson that they can learn is that delivery, mobile technology, clever gimmicks, all that stuff is kind of the name of the game in the pizza business these days. And what's going to happen is that the market share is in this business is going to come from the mom and pops, the small regional chains, you know, the independents. I mean, Pizza Hut and Papa John's are going to be okay. Nobody needs to worry about them. They'll figure it out. But it'll just promote further consolidation of market share in the pizza business across the country.
I think a lot of us are having these flashes to the future, though, of these flying Amazon drones and the pizza delivering R2-D2s. And I don't know,
sure.
Are we headed to a good place?
Well, it depends on how much you like pizza, Steve.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
if you really like pizza, you don't care how it gets to you, right?
Right, and as long as it's warm and gets there fast, yeah.
Exactly.
Dale Buss, a writer for a Brand Channel, also Forbes, and chief executive. You can follow him on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. We're going to link to his story on Domino's this morning. Dale, thanks as always for being with us on The Opening Bell.
You bet. Thank you.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 549 on the futures markets this morning from the WGN market desk. Dow futures are lower. S&P futures are higher. NASDAQ flat this morning. Overseas, we're seeing European markets mainly higher. Asian markets generally lower. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, thank you very much, and good morning. It was quite a day in the commodity world yesterday. Not a good one for cattle futures. Live cattle futures in bearish territory for the fourth day in a row. Some leftover selling, some fund liquidation after contracts dropped below the technical support levels. And wholesale beef market that was fairly quiet last week and continued this week. And again, some packing plants will be closed on Good Friday and most will be closed on Easter Monday. And that dampened demand for, well, both cattle and hogs. But cattle futures continued to decline. And hog futures yesterday were a mixed market. Some short covering, technical buying, and upward trending wholesale pork prices did lift the lean hog contracts by the end of the day. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. It's 5:51 now on the opening bell, just 4 months after coordinated attacks in Paris killed 130 civilians and shook the international community. Explosions at the airport and metro station in Brussels yesterday have resulted in calls for increased security worldwide on the ground and in the air. And consumers increasingly are second-guessing global travel plans. Joining us this morning is the president and CEO of FareCompare.com, Rick Cini, to talk about that and some other aviation news today at Rick Cini on Twitter. Rick, what should we know about these attacks in Brussels? Is there some sort of security flaw there that happened?
It's such a fluid situation. It's hard to say exactly what's going on. I can tell you that all the major U.S. airlines are providing waivers, which means they'll basically waive your ticket costs and let you rebook at no cost for the next 4 or 5 days. So essentially, it's hard to tell exactly what's going to happen there. But we have, you know, with the attack in Paris late last year, we did do a study afterwards, about a month and a half after, to see if demand dropped by looking at prices to see if prices dropped over time. We didn't see a huge demand drop. So there's an initial sort of wave of people that basically do not want to take three, but we're heading right headlong in to the spring and summer season with the dollar extremely strong, lots of pent-up demand for people wanting to take their once-in-a-lifetime trip to Europe. And I don't expect that to make too much of a dent right now, unless we see continued activity in this area. I think we're probably going to see a lot of people still heading out to Europe this summer.
Obviously, our hearts go out to all those who've been killed and their families and
absolutely
those who've been injured. But United, Delta, American, they've all said that they're suspending flights to Brussels, rerouting other flights. How is this going to impact flying through Europe?
It would be, you know, the equivalent from a flying situation. Brussels is not one of the huge international destinations. It's not even in the top 10 of places where you would go. Now, intra-Europe, there's a lot of people that fly into Brussels, a lot of business travel. It's going to disrupt business travel. As far as leisure travel is concerned, this is a little early in the year for leisure travel, so it's not going to affect as many folks as you might suspect. Mostly internal Europe. It would be the same as having sort of a really bad set of weather in a Chicago or a major hub for 3 or 4 days.
President Obama's in Cuba, and airlines seem to be getting ready to open up the floodgates to let Americans travel to the island nation. How is that proceeding, and when might we see full service to Cuba?
It's the biggest gold rush I've ever seen. So, you know, the State Department has changed the rules about four times in the last five or six weeks. Essentially, now you can go basically as a tour group of one. That would be you, and you being a tourist, now you're a tour group. So basically, they're waiving all those rules where you have to, there's a sort of a series of 12 rules you had to adhere to before. And you have the biggest gold rush that I've ever seen to a travel destination. You have all the banking systems. I'm trying to figure out how to get credit cards down there. They have a two-currency system there, one for the locals and one for tourists. Remember, Cuba also gets lots of tourism from Europe and South America and Mexico. There's cruise ports, new construction at airports, Marriott and Starwood announcing that they're going to be doing some stuff there. Airbnb now allowing people to actually sell part of their homes there. Booking.com announcing they're going to sell hotels there. There's a lot of pent-up demand in the U.S. It's going to take a couple years to unwind all the demand and curiosity for people that want to travel to Cuba, only 100 miles off our coast.
There's a bidding process, though, for a selection of people who are going to go. How's that going to work?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's sort of that first come, first serve, at least as the airlines. We haven't seen the airlines actually throw up their flight schedules yet for these things where they can actually sell the tickets online. There's still charter groups that you can do at the moment, but right now the infrastructure is not there, the hotels aren't there. It's really tough to see what exactly is going to happen right now over the next probably 4 or 5 months, and really we're about to head into hurricane season later on this year. So the perfect, and it's the wet season in Cuba as well. The perfect time to fly to Cuba is sort of November through May. So you're going to see a lot of this activity later in the summer as people start to book their trips for the holiday travel and also for wintertime travel this coming year.
And what do some of the fares look like to Cuba?
Look, it's only 100 miles. I would expect all these fares, we haven't seen them posted yet, but I expect them to be very, very inexpensive, probably in the same sort of range as you would find as flying from someplace like Chicago to Dallas, Dallas to Houston. I mean, look, it's only 100 miles. It's going to be a short hop. So I would expect them under $200. If you see any price over $200 from those locations. Now, if you're flying from the Northeast, it might be a little more expensive because it'll be Caribbean rates sliding up probably into the $250 to $350 range initially and then getting more expensive over time.
Well, let's say we don't want to go to Cuba. Are there any good fares out of Chicago?
Yeah, I was just looking out of Chicago. There's some great deals right now for April travel, for example. There's a lot of low-cost airlines that are flying out under $200 to the West Coast. Portland right now under $200. If you're heading out to the East Coast, you got Boston, New York, Washington, all under $200. And if you take a super ultra-low-cost airline, it's under $100 round trip. And South Florida as well, under $200. And then under $100 if you're willing to fly an ultra-low-cost airline like Spirit, for example.
Rick Sini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. You can find him on Twitter at Rick Sini, S-E-A-N-E-Y, and at FareCompare. We appreciate you being with us on the opening bell this morning, as always. We want to just briefly recap the market situation this morning. Dow futures, S&P futures, NASDAQ futures, all negative now, looking for a lower open on Wall Street later this morning. European stocks mainly higher today. Asian stock market mixed overnight. Again, the big news out of Brussels is it appears that police have arrested a suspect in the bombing yesterday. That's our program for today. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up next. We want to thank our producer today, Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer is always Ben Cortez. Production help from Mike Jacobson. Mary Sandberg is our executive producer. She's on vacation. Hope she's having a good time. We'll be back tomorrow morning bright and early with another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.